Sometimes in life, we get pushed to react first and think later. In the case of Jamie Giovinazzo, a call from an old friend sparked a sudden reaction that would catapult his career, taking him to the next level.
So it's New Year's, and I'm just sitting like, all right, man, it's like I failed so many times, like it's just not possible. So a couple days go by, January 13th, 2013, I'm sitting on the floor, I'm staring at the wall, just like, what the fuck am I gonna do in my life? I look down at my phone, dude, it's Matt Schultz, the same guy who asked me what I ate in 2005. 2005, 2013, was that 8 years later? Calls me out of fucking nowhere. Yo, man, are you still cooking? My heart dropped, and I'm like, dude, you know they say how fast the human brain works? I'm like, dude, you have fucking student loans you gotta pay for, you have fucking car you gotta pay for, you have all this shit you gotta pay for, no one's fucking hiring your ass. You're bartending 3 days a week, you're making dick, like, fuck it. I fucking put my palm over the phone, like, yo, Paul, you think your parents care if I cook at their house? He's like, nah, man, fucking do it. I'm like, yeah, Matt, yo, yeah, bro, of course, I'm still cooking.
Also on this week's episode, we discuss how patience is the foundation of power, keeping tunnel vision, and self-reliance. And now, episode 25 of Culturation.
Good evening, my fellow citizens.
Are you ready? The main event of the evening.
The ideas.
It's the word that you put in.
The ability.
Can you dig it?
The talent.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
Those who influence, the entertainer, the business leader, and the entrepreneur, they're all right here on Culturation. And now, your host, Justin Epstein.
Welcome to Culturation. I'm your host, Justin Epstein. On this week's episode, we speak with the self-reliant bro, Jamie Giovinazzo. Jamie is the founder and owner of Eat Clean Bro, a meal delivery service that provides freshly prepared meals made with all natural ingredients to your doorsteps. From a young age, he's had a love for food and the process behind prepping it. As he grew older, his love for food and fitness converged into one. It was not until he began bodybuilding as a teenager that he discovered the true art behind the generic term, eating clean. He saw the way proper nutrition and diet could transform the body, and was fascinated by the entire concept that simply prepping meals could completely change the way one looked and felt. 10 years ago, he was given a compliment by a stranger in the gym, followed by a question of what it was that he ate, to which he replied, "Grilled chicken, sweet potatoes, and broccoli, bro." And who would have guessed his response would light the fire and spark his destiny? He asked, "Can you cook for me?" And just like that, at 19 years old, with zero business experience, he began working as the owner of his own food business. Within 2 weeks, his entire office was ordering clean prepared meals, and he began to see what a demand there was for clean food. What was even more interesting to him was that people wanted healthy options, but they simply did not have the time. As he battled through highs and lows in his career, he has come out as a successful and passionate entrepreneur who loves his friends and customers as much as he loves helping people achieve their goals. Now, Eat Clean Bro has been in business for 5 years and prepares and delivers thousands of meals each day, and he cannot be more grateful. And with that being said, I'd like to welcome my friend all the way from Jersey, Jamie Giovinazzo, in the building. Ladies and gentlemen, what's going on, man?
What's up, Justin? Thank you for having me here.
No, man, appreciate it. So for those that may not know you, be familiar with you, who you are, or kind of what you do, kind of the quick little overview would be great.
Well, I'm the president and founder of Eat Clean Bro. We specialize in healthy meals delivered straight to your door. We have 140 employees now, company-wide, two kitchens in Freehold, New Jersey. That spreads across all the five boroughs of New York, up into New York State, into Philadelphia, all the way down to, I believe, Newcastle, Delaware. So if you look at a map, we have an enormous delivery zone in New Jersey. And then in Atlanta, we have about if you write an X through Atlanta, we go 2 hours in each direction. Still getting familiar with the counties. I think we're in 14 surrounding counties of Atlanta, all like a huge circle.
Nice. So for those that may not know your story, right, we're going to kind of take it back, kind of where you're from, kind of how it all got started, because Eat Clean Bro, and we'll get into this more, relatively has grown really quickly and become kind of an innovator, a leader in this space. But it took a long time to get to this point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's what I want to make sure today. We kind of take people through your journey. So growing up, were you born in Jersey? Where were you born?
Yeah, man. I grew up in a town called Lawrence Harbor. I grew up there. I've always just had a love for food. I'll never forget one birthday. I might have been like 8 years old, man. I took all the money I had for my birthday, and I went up the street to the deli. And when my mom wasn't home, I made all my friends bacon and eggs. That's probably like my first real understanding of how much I just love to cook for my friends and feed my friends. It's just something that's always been a part of me.
Did your parents cook? Did you see it growing up? Was it something that, like, what made you even have that feeling of connection to food?
My mom was a yeller, so I feel like I think about this a lot, because I guess you reflect a lot on yourself, like, how did this happen? Like, why did this happen? I've always loved food, and I think it's because that was like one of the times in my life where, like, I knew I wasn't getting yelled at. You know, like, when I was a kid, I did bad in school, so I was always, like, in trouble for something. And whenever you sat down to eat, that was a safe time in life. Was, you know, no matter what you were doing in school or what was going on, food was like the dinner table was a safe place. So I think that's, I mean, I might have been born with this just passion or how it developed, but I think that had something to do with it.
And all self-taught, correct?
Yes, all self-taught. I mean, my mom was a good cook. When I was a kid, I used to spend time with my uncle. You know, I used to love when he would make me an egg sandwich or a cheeseburger, or he'd make pizza from scratch. For some reason, I just, like Caesar Milan with the dogs, like, for me, food was just something that just always made sense. So being self-taught and things, just food always spoke to me, from cooking to, you know, like, my parents would tell me when I was like 5 years old, I knew the names. Like, if we go to a restaurant, I'd remember all their names. I'd watch the busboys. I'd watch the servers. I would just watch. I knew what the wait times were. I knew, like, dining schedules and things that, like, normal kids just never. These are just weird things that I don't think kids or even adults paid attention to.
Don't even notice these things. So at 8, you start kind of getting into this and making food for your friends and building community and stuff like that. Anything else during that time that you're interested in? Is it sports? Is it?
So I was obviously a chubby kid, and I hated it. You know, back in my kid mentality, I always wanted the pretty girls to like me. So I got into lifting weights when I was 11. So I was, like, pretty young. I didn't want to be fat anymore. So I started wrestling and lifting weights. And that kind of became an obsession of mine, because I was strong. So it was something I cling to, you know. It was something I was really good at, was lifting heavy weight. So that was just something I always really liked, and I had no idea it would ever come together the way it did.
And when you're, you know, cooking your meals and working out at this point and doing all this, is there a favorite type of food you're liking at this point?
I didn't really get into dieting until when I was in high school after wrestling. I thought I wanted to be a pro bodybuilder, but that's what I thought I wanted to be. And so I got into personal training, and then all the older personal trainers took me under their wing, and then I started dieting. Once I started dieting, and I started really transforming my body into what, like, a bodybuilder looks like. That's, you know, I guess that's when, like, the two, I was 19 years old. I wasn't thinking business. I wasn't thinking money. I wasn't thinking anything other than, you know, just goal driven, trying to just do my first bodybuilding show right and follow all the rules. And that's kind of where it all started.
So with the food stuff and, let's say, the bodybuilding stuff, it seems like everything that you were doing, whether it was at 5 years old or now 19, you were very structured and very dedicated to the things that you do.
I wouldn't say structured. Like, I think I told you, I'm probably the most successful procrastinator you ever met. But when I do something, it's tunnel vision. It's 100% when I do something.
Do you feel that tunnel vision? Because you hear people talk about this all the time. some people say you can't just have, you know, one goal and be focused on what you have to have a number of buckets, a number of different things in queue. But then you hear people like yourself, and that I've heard that have become very successful, where they're like, I have on the blinders and there is no other option. This is what I'm focused on. Do you think there's advantages to it, disadvantages, a little bit of both?
Yeah. So for me, man, there was no, it was kind of like they tell the story about the ancient Romans where they used to burn the ships on enemy land. So there was no retreat. Like they burn the boats. I guess that's what they call it. Like burn the boats. This just, it all manifested in a weird way. But for me, tunnel vision, I wouldn't consider myself stubborn, but I just think like there was just no other way. Kind of like Eminem with rapping, right? Like there was just nothing else he could do or would do. No matter how many times he failed, he just kept going back to it. I think you can't teach what I went through and what I did and how I turned out is not something you can learn in school. It was just like, it was a just true passion that I just couldn't help myself. I mean, I failed so many times, humiliated myself a million times. I just kept going back to it, getting a little better each time until eventually, you know, I started a real company and got where I'm at today. But as far as the blinders go, you definitely need the blinders, because if you're pioneering anything, whether it's Lewis and Clark getting to the West Coast of America, I mean, you do anything that no one's ever done before and people are going to think you're crazy. So yeah. If you don't have blinders, they're going to talk you out of it.
Do you think that people have the ability to do things like yourself where they can set a realistic goal and execute it, and they're just afraid because they're worried about outside opinion, parents, people tell them that they shouldn't because it's not the norm? Can everybody get there? Can everybody kind of hit these pinnacles? Or is it just certain people are built for it and others are not?
I think the most important thing in life is knowing exactly what you want out of life. And if you understand what you want out of life and you set your mind to something, you can absolutely do it. I'll never tell anybody they can't do something. But one of the things, so Charlemagne wrote a book and said, like, fuck your dream if it isn't yours. And he talked about, like, how he wanted to be a radio host. He was doing a little good in radio, and then people were copying, trying to do radio, but that wasn't their real dream. You know, it's like somebody tried to start what you're doing because they see you doing well. Or someone, and plenty of people tried doing meal companies in New Jersey. I mean, they're popping up everywhere. If it's not your real passion, like, Steve Jobs said it first. I think he said something like, if you're not dying to do this, like, you'll never make it.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty big question that you just asked about, like, I don't want to discourage anybody, but you have to be honest with yourself, because the world is very competitive. And business is very hard. So like, the only advantage you have in life is like, if you're truly passionate about something and you are going to fail. Gary Vee talks about failing all the time. Right? That's the Instagram's all about. Fall in love with failure. Yeah. I mean, I don't love failure, but it still happens to all of us.
Yeah. I mean, I heard somebody say the other day, what was it? A loss is not a loss, it's a lesson. Yeah. So treat an L as a lesson. So the thing is, you had multiple lessons because you had a lot of experiences. I don't want to call them losses. I call them learning experiences for you. A lot of people would stop typically right when they run into a roadblock or a hurdle and say, fuck it, or it's too overwhelming. You looked at that as more motivation, more determination, almost kind of like, fuck you, I'm going to show you, right? So you get into this bodybuilding now, and you're still cooking at this time or no?
I was only cooking for myself. So the way the story all unfolded was I was completely shredded. I was training for my bodybuilding show, and some stranger came up to me in the locker room and asked me what I ate. And the question kind of caught me off guard, because, you know, just imagine someone just comes up to you and just asks you what you eat. Yeah. You know, I mean, are you ready to answer that question for the audience?
No, because
like salads and shit.
It's kind of like the same thing you said. It's just a big question. It's like, I don't know what day of the week.
So I was like, chicken, sweet potatoes, broccoli. Because that's literally all I ate at the time. And he's like, oh man, like, can you make me some? So I wasn't thinking business. I wasn't thinking anything. I was just thinking, at 19 years old, my brain was thinking, oh man, if I could cook his food and I can get my food for free, then I could put my $200 a week I'm making personal training into my pocket and not at the grocery store. So I saw it as a win. So I said, look, I ran some quick numbers. I said, look, man, I'll do you for $3 a meal. So.
Which, by the way, your goods of food at that point had to be more than $3.
Oh, it was losing money? It was a horrible deal. But I don't know what the hell I was thinking, man. But anyway, I mean, it was like, it had, like, God had something to do with this. And the further we get into the story, man, it's like pretty crazy. But so I started cooking for Matt the next day. So I went to the store, I got the food, cooked it, brought it the next day, gave it to him. I saw him at the gym later that day. And then within like 24 hours, two of the guys at his office wanted food too. So he's like, hey, you know, Sean and Ned want food. I said, Matt, listen, man, I'll keep your price at $3, but your boys got to pay $5. And then I was in business.
So that's all it took. What was your itch for cooking and the restaurant industry coming back at this point for you? Or no, you were still more bodybuilder focused and just looking at how can I pay for this new activity?
This was just the beginning of like my 19-year-old virgin eyes. Like, at 19 years old, dude, you're not, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure some 19-year-olds are out there trying to plan their entire life, but I didn't have a plan. And, I just took it every day as it came. And then by the end of the week, I was cooking for everybody at the office. So I landed this enormous corporate account. It was 2006. The mortgage industry was on fire. It was a huge mortgage. It was like a huge mortgage office. There was a couple hundred loan officers there. And I basically imploded my dad's kitchen within like 6 weeks. So my dad and my stepmom was like, look, man, you got to find somewhere else to cook. At 19 years old, I took that as like, I didn't know I could rent a kitchen. There was like a lot of things I didn't know. I didn't have a mentor. I didn't have anybody advising me. So
you're just figuring it out as you go.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh God, I'm out of business. So that was my first attempt. But at 19 years old, that taught me I could own my own business. And that taught me, like, you know, when I would work into the middle of the night and I was trying to fulfill these orders and I was just getting annihilated, that taught me, I could own my own business. And that was something that was just so eye opening. It changed my life, and it never, they say, like, once your brain or whatever expands to a certain point, it can never go back. At that point, I could never go back. So even though I failed that time, I was like,
oh, you saw the opportunity.
Well, I knew what I did wrong.
Yeah.
So I knew what I did wrong, and I had to fix it. And then I went back. I knew I wasn't a chef, and I knew I didn't have a kitchen. So my best friend Seth was going to school to become a chef, and his mom loved it. You know, his mom wanted him to be an entrepreneur, so we partnered up, and we used his mom's kitchen. So I had all the accounts and he had the kitchen. So like that was the arrangement. And I would go out and try to sell the meals and he would cook it. And every summer, like, we did that for a while. And then it was up and down. And then eventually, I'm going to cut the story short, but 2012, you know, I was working in restaurants at that point. I had like an associate's degree because I kept dropping in and out of college to do this. But ultimately, my partner Seth quit on me, and that was kind of like, I felt like that was cutting the legs out from under me, and that was when I gave up and I quit. And I was in the wrong, like, I was in the wrong state of mind where I was relying on people. So, like, I'm a big believer of self-reliance. I talk about it all the time. Self-reliance. Patience is the foundation of power. Self-reliance, you can't depend on anybody but yourself at the end of the day. And if your back's against the wall and you're fucking trying to count on other people, your back's always going to be up against the wall.
Yeah.
You know, the only reason why I can depend on people now is because my employees have fucking kids and mortgages and shit, and they fucking need me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, I know who needs me, and I do have people who depend on me now, and I can trust people now. But when you're first starting a business, fucking forget that shit. You're not a boss yet, you know? Yeah. You know, fucking roll your sleeves up and do that shit yourself. At that point, I was 26 years old. I had dropped out of college. I had pretty much accepted the fact that I fucked around, that I fucking wasted so much time with this fucking business, and that it was over, that the dream was over. You know, obviously now that I made it, a lot of people are always believed in you. No, you fucking didn't, bro. Like, you didn't believe in me because you were telling me to go back to college and get a real job. I was hearing that a lot. I was at an I was just discouraged, man. I had failed so many times.
Made you keep on going back, though? Because if you failed that many times, what was making you say, I have to try this again?
It had to have been just the passion, man. Like, it had to have been the passion. I felt like every time, I just felt like it was never me, you know? I felt like it never failed because of me. It failed because of outside, like, reasons. And, like, so, like, the whole, like, I guess my whole entire mental mind state leading up to that point, like, taught me, it was what pretty much taught me about self-reliance. Because, like, there were so many outside factors that, like, would break down and would make me quit. And, like, it just ate me alive. But I think what made me give up in 2012 was just the clock. You know, I felt like, man, I did this a whole bunch of times. Nobody's willing to invest. Nobody's really helping me. And I just didn't think I had what it took to be successful because I failed so many times. So I was like, all right, man, fuck it. I accepted the fact that I had to start at the bottom. So, like, I think entitlement had a lot to do with that, too. You know, it feels good to be good at things. You know, I was good at preparing meals. I was good at all that, but I just kept coming up short. So I decided I'm going to start at the bottom. I had failed business owner and bartender on my resume. So I started like applying for jobs like Sleepy's, Verizon, Best Buy, and I just wasn't getting hired. And then Hurricane Sandy happened, which destroyed where I grew up. My mom, my grandma, my uncle lost their homes, and it was a really hard time, and I was still bartending. I was bartending in South Amboy, and that town was hit hard too. Really horrible time in my life, and I was just dwelling. So, like if I go back to my mind in 2012, just really sad, discouraging times. And Hurricane Sandy happened, and there was November, December, for me to dwell and contemplate, like, what the fuck am I going to do with my life? Because you got to imagine, dude, I failed at what I love doing, and now I can't even get a fucking job at Best Buy. My interview, like, I was honest with the guy. I was like, look, man, I have an associate's degree. I just want to get bartender and failed business owner off my resume, and, like, I'll do whatever it takes. I don't want any special treatment. I don't want special pay. Start me at $10 an hour or whatever it was. I'm like, you know, this is where I'm at. You know, this is why I'm 26. This is why I'm here. Like, and I thought I got it. And like I said, I was willing to work at the bottom. And then I didn't get the job. So I was discouraged. And I'll never forget, man, that New Year's going into 2013, I was just so depressed. I was like, look, man, I'm never gonna let myself be in this position ever again. And, like, I just promised myself that no matter what, I would never be this broke. I would never be this sad. I'd never be this fucking pathetic. And I was just, like, dwelling. And it was, like, a huge relief that, like, I made that declaration in my mind. But I was like, that's all good. But, like, what the fuck am I gonna do? I was trying to be a security guard at a hospital. Like, my whole thing was like, yo, I need to get something on my resume.
You needed a win.
I needed a win. Yeah. So I was living at my buddy Paul's house. His parents, me and Paul are like 26-year-old. It was like stepbrothers. Family was fucking bad.
Making the bunk beds.
We were like squatting at his parents' house. And what was crazy is his parents had a commercial kitchen in their house.
Okay.
So now you see where the story's going. All right. So it's New Year's. And I'm just sitting like, all right, man, this is great. Like, I made this resolution. I made this declaration. Like, I'm ready to fucking do something great. But, like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing because I had given up on cooking. So Paul and Nick, these other kids, were trying to talk me into doing it. And I'm like, look, dude, I can't waste any more time. Like, I just can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I failed so many times. Like, it's just not possible. So a couple days go by. January 13th, 2013. I'm sitting on the floor. I'm staring at the wall. Just like, what the fuck am I going to do with my life? I look down at my phone, dude. It's Matt Schultz, the same guy who asked me what I ate in 2005.
That's all right.
2005, 2013. What's that, 8 years later?
Yeah.
Calls me out of fucking nowhere. Yo, man, are you still cooking? My heart dropped, and I'm like, dude, you know they say how fast the human brain works? I'm like, dude, you have fucking student loans you got to pay for. You have fucking car you got to pay for. You have all this shit you got to pay for. No one's fucking hiring your ass. You're bartending 3 days a week. You're making dick. Like, fuck it. I fucking put my palm over the phone. I'm like, yo, Paul, you think your parents care if I cook at their house? He's like, nah, man, fucking do it. I'm like, yeah, Matt, yo, yeah, bro, of course. I'm still cooking. I'm like, of course.
That's crazy.
Well, bro, you got to remember, January is the... There's never an easier time in the world to sell healthy
everybody's
meals. Okay,
resolution. You talk about resolutions, right?
You want to talk about easy sales? If you want a fucking easy sell, start selling healthy meals in January, bro. I'll tell you, you'll fucking kill it.
What are the gym memberships are like 90% up and then they decline by like 80% two months later?
I had the wind to my back.
Well, plus you got nothing to lose at this point, right?
I have fucking nothing to lose. I had, well, besides time.
Time, though, you know, that's what I find interesting. That's what you kind of keep on referencing back to. Time seemed to be your biggest fear factor in a lot of ways, right? It wasn't the money or the debt or things that you owed. It was, I'm losing time in my life to make some epic shit happen.
Yeah, so, like, dude, I tell any chance that I can give kids advice, I always tell them, bro, you're a fucking kid until you turn 26. That is, like, the breaking point of kid.
Yeah.
25-year kid, 24-year kid, 23-year kid.
Because 25, but you could rent a car is when you could officially rent a lease. Or
26 is that year where it's like, dude, if you don't have your shit together, you know, this isn't a joke anymore.
Yeah.
So at that point, I just, I just prayed to God. I'm like, you know, please, God, help me. You know, like, I don't know what I'm doing. Just please, you know, please don't let this, like, please don't, like, just help me, please. And I called up my buddy Seth, and I was like, hey, man, I'm going to start cooking again. Like, do you want in? And he was like, no fucking way, dude. If I have to, like, he was not meant for self-employment.
Yeah.
So he gave me his blessings, and, you know, that was it. So I said, this time it's different. You know, this time it's on me. There's no fucking partners. There's nobody going to fuck me. And there's no one going to put me out of business this time. It's on me. So I took my last, like, $300 I had that weekend. The bar was... Dude, I made shit money at that bar. And I had fucking savings. But, like, I spent it all on stupid suits to do job interviews. Which... Obviously, I didn't get any of the jobs, which was another discouraging uppercut.
But and it's worse because you actually used it for, like, real shit, which suits to get a job, which is super responsible, actually.
Yeah.
Versus, like, you're going out popping bottles, blowing it on stuff that doesn't matter.
Well, I had, man, at that point in my life, I was, like, committed to bettering myself. And I was trying to just write, like, I never hurt anybody. I never disrespected anybody. The only person I hurt and disrespected was myself by failing so many times. But... thankfully, you know, one of the biggest reliefs in my life was that I made this work and I made this happen. Because up until that point, all that failure was discouraging and meant nothing. It wasn't until I made it that I could look back at all that pain and, like, just thank you, God. Like, thank you. Like, that pain was for something.
Yeah.
You know, so many people give up on their dreams and all that fucking pain they felt and failure, it never paid off. That was like an invest, like, you know, that investment paid off. And so that was the thing, self-reliance. And I took my last $300 from bartending that weekend and I went to the store and I bought food. And over the years, obviously, I built a book. So Matt, I'm like, hey, man, like, what do you want? Like, what, you know, do you have guys? So, like, I was really good at, like, I wasn't upselling anybody. I was selling meals for $6, but I was able to build a little business. And I had, over the years, I had people who love my food. So I just went down my contact list and I called everybody. I let them know, yo, Jamie's cooking again. And I was just like super committed to making sure like everybody was happy and that like my customers were taken care of and like putting together a good business.
But you also do, you know, the way you talk about it is you actually put in the work. And that's the difference. You do this shit that's not sexy, not fun, and most people don't want to do, like going through your contacts, making cold calls, reaching out to people, making the asks. These are things that people either A, they let ego get in the way, B, they just, it's uncomfortable for them, so they don't do it. But you really seem to be humbled by the process. And I don't think, no matter where you ever go, it seems like no matter how successful you get, you don't really seem to have been changed by any of this.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably because of what you had to go through to get here.
I've seen the rise and fall of many great entrepreneurs. And I like to tell my story about LL Cool J. So in between failures, I was a bodyguard for celebrities in New York City. And I'll never forget how excited I was to meet Nas at his record release party. And yo, the dude turned out to just be like a fucking asshole. Didn't want anybody near him. And we're like, dude, this is your record release party. Like, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Jay-Z just fucking burned your ass in his rap battles. Like, you better start making friends in New York or else your fucking music career is gone. And LL Cool J was there. And I was never really like a fan or not a fan. It was just somebody I didn't never really thought of. But when I met him, I was like, damn, dude. You are the coolest motherfucker I ever met in my life. I want to fucking be you. And I was a fan for LL Cool J ever since then. And that always taught me, like, yo, no matter who the fuck you think you are, like, yo, you better check yourself because, you know, you're only as good as your last meal, they say in the restaurant world. So yeah, check yourself. And that shit with LL Cool J changed my life, man.
So the way with LL, right, his personality, him as a person, impacted you, influenced you. Do you feel that the reason you've been able to build this business, because you started just as you, right?
Yeah.
On this last attempt, it all was on you. Do you feel that because you are treat people well, you're humble, your level of service is what made this successful more than the food? Because like you said, there's a lot of meal service and a lot of meal delivery companies. And they all can try to say, we have better food than the next. But were they investing into you, the individual, do you think? Or was it a combination of it?
Yeah. I think, so like, one of the things I never bring up or talk about is how good the food is. I dedicated my life to grilling chicken, man. All right? Just so fucking crazy that sounds. But like, they say there's one thing you're better than anybody else in the world. Yeah. And I can grill chicken. Like, I can make a piece of chicken like filet mignon, dude. So, like,
listen, man, people make pizza for a living and perfect it. So, chicken is right up there. Yeah, I don't see why not.
Like, bro, baking sweet potatoes, blanching broccoli. I try to just make my shit like perfect every time. But, like, I think the relationships I've built and just, you know, I know. You know, Hurricane Sandy changed me too, bro. You see your fucking grandma and your mom lose everything. You know, that type of heartbreak, that's a fucking heartbreak most people don't know. So that's pain that, you know, you never lose. And there's been a lot of pain that I never let pain, like I always tell people, you got to build off the bricks thrown at you. So like, I never let the pain, whenever I'm in pain, I don't try to put other people in pain. I try to do good. I try to give back. I try to help people. I try to do something nice. You know, that way I could kind of metabolize that pain into love or something like that. So I think that has a lot to do with how I am.
Do you think the Sandy situation was the pivotal moment, like that aha turning point that led to this?
Yeah, that was definitely like, dude, I cannot ever let anything like this happen to my family ever again.
And this comes back to the self-reliance thing.
Yeah, self-reliance. It's just so critical, man. If there's anything anybody gets from listening to this, it's self-reliance. And like, take golf, for example. You could hit that ball as far as you want, But if the ball doesn't get into the hole, like, you're not going to win the game. You got to, like, make sure, like, and this has to do with execution. But, like, self-reliance, you have to follow through. You have to keep your promises. You have to make sure that you get the ball in the hole. Doesn't matter, like, how beautiful your swing is. You have to follow it through. You have to see it to the end. And that's, like, huge in business. As technology evolves and all these things evolve, like, you still have to be the same guy. Like, the stuff they write about, like, all the original entrepreneurs, all that, like, Think and Grow Rich, all those books that are over 100 years old now still hold true the same as this day.
Yeah, I think, you know, at the end of the day, core principles and foundation, good morals, good ethics, and treat people right, you can never lose, man.
Right.
And you talk about people with, like, consistency, look, whether it's music, like a Jay or anybody, if you put out good content, it will always win. People come and go, right? And it's the same in business, I feel like. For you, what I find interesting is that, you know, you start this business, you start to see success, but you never looked at, like, putting blame on others or other things. I liked what you said about, I looked at what went wrong each time, and I focused on what went wrong to make it right. So you were hyper-focused.
Yeah.
That I find interesting, because a lot of people, they don't look at, they make excuses for why it shouldn't have gone wrong, or it wouldn't have gone wrong if this happened. You just kind of accepted, I fucked up on this, or this wasn't good, or this wasn't right, and okay, now I'm going to correct it this time. You try again, it didn't work. Okay, well, now these pieces didn't work. It was almost like you were figuring out a puzzle.
Exactly.
And allowing it to grow, and most people just may say, fuck it, I quit the puzzle, and I don't want to keep on figuring out how to build this.
Yeah, and that's back to where, like, the tunnel vision comes into place. Like, that's where passion comes into place, because for me, man, there was no other way. You know, there was just no other way. It's what I love doing. It's who I was. It's what made me happy. So for me, there was no other way. And for anybody who's passionate about anything, that's just how it is.
Yeah. So now you start calling people, right?
Yeah.
You're building your book back. You're starting to see a little momentum. What happens now, right? Like, where does it start to go from here?
So I start cooking meals, man. I did 82 meals that week. I made like a $150 profit. I put it back into the business. I stayed bartending, and I just kept going. So I did like 3 months at like Paul's house. And then the place I was bartending at, the guy wasn't doing well, so I bartered with him. So I was like, look, man, I'll manage your restaurant, like, if you let me use your kitchen on, like, Monday and Wednesday mornings.
That's creative, man. I like that.
Yeah, so, like, he was, like, a cheap, like, most restaurant owners are cheap, so he loved the idea, so he didn't have to pay a manager, and I just made sure he was staffed. I did the schedules, and, like, I made sure his doors were open. But then what happened was the dude started seeing, like, man, this might be something. And he tried to weasel his ass into my business. So I fucking bounced. Dude just tried to strong arm me. So I went down the street. My buddy George was a chef at this restaurant. So he's like, yeah, you could cook here. And he was another one, dude. I was paying rent. And he was just putting the rent money into his pocket. So the owner tried throwing me out. And I was like, I don't understand. She's like, you haven't paid rent since you've been here. Like, I've been giving George money every week. She's like, are you serious?
He was just pocketing it.
And then, like, he tried to lock me out. And, dude, I was only cooking for friends and family at the time.
At this point, okay.
Yeah. And, so the guy just, he was, like, another obstacle. But I wasn't letting anybody stop me this time.
You were laser focused
at
this
point. So I got to the owner. I got the key. I eliminated him. And, like, I got around him. But at most times, dude, the original restaurant owner would have been enough, you know? So he was trying to strong-arm me, and then George tried to strong-arm me. I got around that, and then the worst blow. Now, dude, I'm leaving out a lot of things, but, like, dude, there was a lot of times where people would place big orders and then cancel, right? So, like...
So, dude, now you're out money, you're out time and food.
For a cash flow perspective, man, food costs money. Rent, all that other dumb stuff. when these people would place large orders and cancel them, it would like bankrupt me, man. It was bad. So I always tell people, trying to start a business with no money is like rubbing two sticks together, trying to start a fire.
Yeah.
So I'm leaving some of those details out. Anyway, I got around that. And then one day she comes up to me and she's like, it was a Tuesday. I was washing the dishes. I was scrubbing everything. She's like, you know, Jamie, like, this isn't really worth it for me anymore. The landlord wants to increase my rent. I'm not renewing the lease. Like, you just got to be out of here by Friday. So I had been 6 months into the game. I got 4 fucking days to find a new kitchen. But within that, like, I still have another job and shit. So trying to juggle the second job, trying to find the new kitchen, I thought I was done for. And that was the time I thought I was done. But I was like, dude, I didn't come this far just to come this far. So I called one of the other guys that I used to work for. We were on really good terms. He had a huge Italian restaurant on Route 9 known as, I called Joe. I said, hey, Joe, you know, I have this catering company. I cook like bodybuilder meals. Like, can I use your kitchen in the morning? Like, it'll just be me, no strangers. And, at this point, dude, I was expecting a shakedown. I was expecting a fucking equity shakedown. I was expecting him to fucking do something.
Cause that's already been shown, yeah.
But everybody's been trying to get it, like, bite. They've been trying to bite my neck out. So he's like, yeah, man, come by, no problem. And I was like, holy shit, dude. The biggest fucking deal of my life, the yes, man, no problem, you know? And at that point, E-Clean Bro started using Nona's. And all of, Nona's was the first time that I ever had a place to call home, a legitimate place to call home, where I could start growing my business and really dig my feet into the ground. And yeah, man, that dude saved my life. So
that's kind of turning point number 2 almost for you.
That was the turning point, man. And at that point, I was able to quit my bartending job and be fully self-employed. Part of the reason why I wanted to stop bartending so bad was because during Hurricane Sandy, like, my mom started drinking a lot. Like, she was coming to my bar and my mom was drinking and driving, and I felt like, Jesus, dude, like, I don't want to kill my own mom, you know? So that was really horrible, and I just hated the idea that I was pouring drinks and I was a part of, I just needed to be a part of something positive, and I didn't care if it was paying the bills. So when I worked my last shift bartending, man, that was like a huge, that was almost a bigger win than just having a, like, that was like double win, you know? Yeah. Not bartending, and nothing against bartending, nothing against nightlife. It just, I had done it for so many years, and then I saw what was going on with my mom, and I couldn't be a part of it, man. I had to leave.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I was like, that was a really happy point in my life, and I felt like,
Was that almost like the last thing weighing you down to kind of move forward with this E-Clean Bro situation?
Yeah, so like, the bar actually was a really good social networking place because I was picking up customers left and right, you know? At the time, I was in great shape, shredded.
Yeah, so people want to know,
fuck, what are, yeah, you eating? Yeah. People were like, oh, dude, yeah, I'll have some. So I had built a good amount of business from the bar, but at that point, being able to focus solely on the company and stuff was great, and then hiring people and moving in that direction was huge. So that was like July 2013, man. That's when like, it started, you know, I started gaining momentum.
Now, and let's not forget, you started in 2005.
Right, yeah.
And in 2013, you're just actually now starting to see, which, correct, puts into perspective for people what this shit really takes.
It doesn't happen overnight, man. Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. It's, you know, on the outside looking in, it might look like some shit comes together, right? And maybe we'll get into some other stuff where, like, things really came together. But yeah, you're right, man. It started in 2005, and I didn't really figure the shit out until, yeah, 13.
So now that you're winning, right, and things are starting to move positive, let's talk about, like, what you said, some of the good shit, right?
Yeah.
You've gone through some rough shit, yep, but now it's taken you to a place where you have a viable business. So when do you start to realize, I have something here?
Well, I still try to, like, I think for me, when I like just to talk back before, I've seen the rise and fall of many great entrepreneurs, and I think it all starts when you start like sucking your own ass. So I try never to think of myself like that. I always try to think of myself as, you know, the kid begging God, like, please just help me. That's how I try to look at myself, so I don't get like too far carried away. It's like my shit has been all over the place. So December of 2013, going into New Year's, I was so excited because I had made it. I had enough money in the bank to get through January, and no matter what, I was going to be in business for one full year. And to me, that was like, that's up there with like the greatest accomplishment in my life, because I was so scared to do this again. I was so scared I was going to fail. And I was just so humiliated. And the fact that like I made it a year, I'm getting some momentum and I'm turning into a real business. That was like one of the biggest wins of my life. You know, I think like just feeling, just not being a failure anymore. Yeah. You know what I mean? Looking back, like, yeah, I failed a bunch of times, but you know what? This time I made it. That was probably when I felt the best. Going into that, so like the highlight reel started to pick up when I ran into Mike the Situation's brother Frank at GNC, and that mortgage office back in 2005. Mike, you know, Sorrentino, Mike the Situation, before he got famous, he was in the mortgage world. So we used to cook for him before he got famous. Then he, you know, obviously blew up on Jersey Shore. So I saw Frank and I was like, yo, Frank, let Mike know, you know, Jamie's cooking again. Like, there was no Eat Clean, Bro. There was no, like...
It was Jamie.
You know, it was Jamie. You know, like, yo, Jamie's cooking again. So...
Did the name exist at that point?
So let me just put it out there, man. My dad came up with the name Eat Clean, Bro. I didn't know what I wanted to call it. I was kind of like, I didn't even want to call it anything because I had failed so many times. I was kind of like, yeah, just let people know Jamie's cooking. But he's like, you know, why don't you just call it Eat Clean, Bro? Like, that's all you say. And dude, it was wide open. The domain, there was nothing. I mean, I own the trademark Eat Clean, Bro.
You do? Yeah. Okay.
So that name, like, I guess back in 2013, people thought it would be fucking crazy to ever call your business that or trademark that or whatever.
Yeah.
So I told Frank, and Frank told Mike, and then his brother Mark was the one like managing the family. They brought me in, and like I was cooking for their whole family, and they were a really huge account for me. So that's kind of what got me going. I'll get into the highlight reel. So one day I'm on Facebook. So the fact that like Mike the Situation's ordering meals is important because I'm on Facebook. My buddy Sean Dua checks into the Mr. Olympia. And now my buddy Sean is just like this sweetheart teddy bear, never played sports, never worked out. I'm like, Sean, like, what the fuck are you doing at the Olympia? You know, that's where like, like
Arnold.
Serious motherfuckers go to the Olympia to check out what's going on. He's like, oh, I'm the CFO of this company, Shreds. So I was like, holy shit, that's awesome. At the time, Shreds was like blanketed Instagram. I'm like, shit, like, fucking wish there was something we could do together. And he was like, yeah, I'll talk to Arvin or whatever. So like, me and Sean were friends from high school, so like I could talk to him about anything. So it wasn't weird, you know. So I was like, Sean, what happened? He's like, oh yeah, Arvin heard of you. Now here's the thing, people think my Instagram blew me up. I had fucking street cred, all right? I had like legit street cred in New Jersey in the bodybuilder on the whatever. So like before, this is all before like Instagram got real big. So like people knew me before Instagram. So I always want to put that out there. People knew me before Instagram.
Yeah.
So Arvin's like, yeah, he said he heard of you. Like Mike loves it. Like come by. So I was like, I brought meals up for Arvin. Arvin liked it. I started cooking for all of his guys. And then like Arvin just started throwing me all those like really famous fitness models and stuff. So I was cooking for all the Insta-famous people. And then I started cooking for Massey. So she had Manco Fit. She was the biggest female fitness account on Instagram at the time. And then she really liked what I was doing, and she liked me. So she threw me Lala's way, Lala Anthony. I started cooking for Lala, and bro, when Lala shouted me out, I got 40,000 followers in 24 hours.
That's crazy.
My phone fucking, like, emails, like, you couldn't, like, the phone kind of just died. Couldn't be used.
I'll tell you, man, and this is, social media is one of these things, right, where there's a lot that you can say wrong about it.
Yeah.
But then there's things that where it can, in this case, do good and literally change somebody's life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All off a fucking shout out.
That was back when people listen to celebrities. Like now, I mean, it's flooded with ads. But yeah, like back then.
Yeah, people weren't doing it like pay for play all the time.
Yeah. And one of the things about all the celebrities who mentioned me, like, it's real. Like, I'm not paying for that.
Yeah.
Just so. But once Lala shouted me out, dude, it was fucking crazy. So she introduced me to Beyonce's cousin, Angie. And then, like, Angie, like, I was hanging out at Parkwood Entertainment. I saw all Beyonce's awards.
Are you sitting there at this time going, how the fuck am I here right now?
That was some mind-blowing shit, you know? Like, Beyonce is like, dude, fucking Beyonce, dude. Like, that is really cool. And then I met my friend Cheryl, who's Dr. Oz's assistant. Because, like, the buzz in New Jersey, New York was so big, people wanted to see what it was. So she liked me, and she brought me up to Z100 with Dr. Oz. And then that was, like, another explosion where the phones just went. I mean, Z100 is a syndicated, like, state. Yeah. I mean, it's huge. And then when you're next to Dr. Oz, I mean, that's even, like, that's, like, just, you know.
That's like the Oprah of the doctor world. Yeah.
Seriously. So at that point, I was on fire. And then I get a text one day, like, yo, Jamie, it's Mello. I think I have an opportunity for you with the Knicks. And I'm like, yeah, fucking right. Like, I'm being pranked right now. Lo and behold, it really was him. So he got me in with the Knicks. I started catering for the Knicks.
Bro, this is crazy. Oh, right,
it's
now.
Yeah, it's fucking, dude.
Are, at this point, is it happening so fast and surreal that you're not really processing it yet?
Well, like, my whole thing is this. Like, dude, if I don't do right by these people, like, and I don't do right by my customers, and, like, I don't keep doing everything fucking perfectly, it's all gonna disappear. So, like,
so was it fear that kept you going, or was it more of just a passion to deliver the best?
It was like, look, motherfucker, this is real cool, but if you don't stay on top of your game, it's not gonna mean shit.
So you were checking yourself.
Checking myself. Yeah. So, like,
with most people, by the way, at this point, would be tripping out and probably getting ego and not focusing so much on the customer experience.
Right.
And instead focusing on, like, yo, do you know who I'm cooking for?
Yeah. It's, so, like I told you before, right, when I started getting all these celebrities, I didn't just make the food good for them. I made the food good for everybody. So, like, I really had to, you know, and I give a lot of credit to my wife because she was right there with me, man, like, every step of the way, making sure, like, all the fucking loose ends were tied up. And so then like, and then I made friends with Angie Martinez, and then Angie Martinez hooked me up with Sus One, then Sus One hooked me up with Sav, and then Sav hooked me up with DJ Khaled and Rick Ross, and, like, all this crazy shit is just, like, it's like a rocket. So that was all, like, New York was on fire, and it was such an exciting time. And then I'm thinking, like, I'm, like, cooking for all these super famous fucking people. Like, let me think. Let me dive into, like, who I want to meet, you know? I wanted to meet Jay-Z. I wanted to meet 50 Cent. I wanted to meet Frankie Edgar. And I was like, maybe if I ask Angie about Jay or ask Lala about 50. But I'm like, oh, that's fucking weird. One of the things about celebrities, I think, why they like me so much is I don't ask them for fucking anything, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever crumbs you want to throw my way, I appreciate. If not, like, I just appreciate your support. So I think that is probably the reason why celebrities like working with me so much, is because I'm not, like, a fucking dude who's busting their balls for anything. You know, it's a simple...
But you're also real as shit.
Yeah, like, thank you, man.
You're super transparent. There is no facade. There is no front. Like, you are who you are.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think people, like, probably appreciate that. You know what I'm saying? Because at the end of the day, I feel like in a lot of ways, and I told you this the first time we met, I mean, you are the brand.
Yeah.
I mean, you really are. Like, your passion when you talk about the food is crazy how you light up. Like, you rep your company. I mean, you live this life. Like, this is almost like your child to you.
It is, man. It's everything. So, yeah, there's, like, you know, you talk to people, dude, there's always, like, some hidden agenda. You know, like, what's this motherfucker up to? You know what? I don't even know if I'm smart enough to have a hidden agenda. I'm just like, I'm like the Rocky entrepreneur. You know, I've been like fucking.
It's a good way to put it, man.
I've been like fucking hit. Like, I fucking got my ass beat for this championship.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't fucking come in winning. I came in losing, getting my head knocked off, and I fucking stayed alive to win.
But even doing like a podcast like this, right? People come in and they're pretty open. That's why they kind of like coming on Culturation, is because it's like real raw. It's meant to be authentic. But you don't try to even like finesse it to try to sound like something like sell. Like, I don't even put like selling in your vocabulary, because you do you.
Yeah.
And people either embrace it or they don't. But you know, at the end of the day, you're always going to get the real person.
Yeah. Thank you. I tell people too, like, to like make, oh, that's a silly name. I'd never order Eat Clean Bro because of the name. I'm like, listen, bro, just like that person who's like, doesn't believe in God, bro, you're only hurting yourself. Like I don't give a fuck what you think about me or my name. My food is fucking real good and it's fucking cheap. So you're only fucking yourself. My whole thing is, why make a bunch of money? You're just going to have to fucking pay a ton of tax on it. I might as well give people the best price. I mean, I don't really fucking care about money. Like, I want to win. I want to be the best. I want people to put my food in the microwave. I feel like, I cannot believe this. Like, that's what I care about.
Does it still, like, so now we're in 2019, obviously. The company is well established at this point and continually grows. Right now you're in Atlanta. You're looking at other markets.
Boston, 2020, baby.
There we go. Do you still trip out when you see people, like, ordering your meals or cooking your meal or talking about your meal? Like, does it still blow your mind? Or now are you like, I deserve it?
No, I don't deserve anything. I don't ever deserve anything, man. All I can do is... the best thing that happened to me in Atlanta, I joined LA Fitness because I needed to spend some time out here to help. And my first day here, I got my Eat Clean Bro shirt on. I'm at the LA Fitness in Atlantic Station. And some girl comes up to me and she's like, oh my God, Eat Clean Bro. Like, that's all I ate when I lived in Queens. And I was like, oh, that's fucking awesome. I'm like, what's your name and stuff? So I sent her a like shirt and stuff. And I'm like, you know, we have a kitchen here in Atlanta. She's like, oh, no fucking way. And it was just like, it just melted my heart, man. Like, I was just so happy that someone in Atlanta just picked up on my shirt at the gym, and I was like, this is cool. You know, this is really cool. That was probably one of the highlights of my trip. But, you know, a lot of people know or familiar with the brand down here now, and with your help, it's getting better. But that was really awesome.
I mean, you know, I look back when we first started talking today, and you're an 8-year-old kid making egg sandwiches for your friends.
Yeah. Yep.
In Jersey.
Yeah.
And now you're not even in your same state anymore.
Right.
And people are telling you that they love your brand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that ship just blow your mind?
Yeah, it does. It does. But it's like, as good as it all is, I try to just like this, man. Like, you know, it's like, one of my last jobs, the guy talked about the dishwasher, and he was like, you know, if the dishwasher goes down, the whole restaurant goes down. So like, for me, man, I appreciate my team so much, and I know and I appreciate how hard everybody works for me and for this brand, that like, I just don't feel like it wouldn't be a service to them to like take credit for what they do. And it's like I'm King Arthur at the round table, you know what I'm saying? I'm not at the fucking head of the table, I'm at the round table. And there's just so many great people around me. There's so many great people behind me. And when you appreciate and you cherish all those fucking people helping you, it's really hard to turn that finger in on yourself, you know?
Yeah.
So that's just how I am. And plus, I'm always just trying to improve. So, like, it's fucking hard being me, man. I can't just stop and smell the fucking roses. I will tell you this. There's two things I wanted to say, but I got cut off with Frankie Egger, who is my fucking man, and I love that guy. Frank Yeager, I started hitting him up on Instagram, and I didn't know this, but right on his Instagram had his management email, and it was his wife, Renee. And I was politely, I wasn't nagging her, but every couple weeks I'd be like, hey, you know, I'm a big fan, just want to send Frankie some meals. Eventually I got through to her. I got him meals. Frankie liked me. Frankie then hooked me up with Renee and Jay Wow and Roger were good friends. So then I got hooked up with Jay Wow and Roger, and then a couple, then I also went to high school with Jackie Frazier, who's Todd Frazier's wife. So like Tom's River, New Jersey, had a bunch of people down there. And then like obviously all the Instagram famous people like Jen Selter. She's super cool. Once the ball gets rolling, and then once you're an established celebrity brand, celebrities kind of just, like the work, at that point the work was done. So now like famous people start.
Gravitate towards
yeah,
you.
Yeah, like Michael B. Jordan, every time he's in New York. But he's friends with Lala and like Rotimi. And
these are all people though that are also super fit too. Yeah. So you know if they're eating it, it's got to be legit.
My food is legit, you know? And yeah, like, dude, I don't know what to tell people. Like, I don't give a fuck about money. Like, I want to be the best, and I want, and like every chance I get to improve, I improve. So if you think the name is silly and like you don't want to order because of the name, like, all right, man. Like, I got fucking 25,000 meals a week going out in New Jersey. Like, people love this shit. Like, if you are fucking scared of the name, then, you know, that's on you, man. But these meals are fucking good, and I know they're good because I cook for people so fucking rich. They have private chefs living in their fucking house, and they're still ordering my fucking meals. So like,
that's a pretty good testament, yeah, right there.
No, man. I'm being serious. So, you know, I eat all over the world now, and like, I'm always trying to improve. But like, dude, for $10 out of the microwave, like, my meals bang. You know.
And like, you also offer like different options too, right? So paleo, keto,
yeah,
all those,
it's,
like,
it's so there. The thing with paleo, I wanted to offer paleo. I feel like paleo is just some fucking diet that was made up at a CrossFit gym where the most shredded guy wins. I mean, there's all different types of like, you know, like cheese and certain things. Like, some paleo people say it's acceptable, some people don't. Once I started seeing like conflicting,
yeah,
there was like too much conflicting ingredients, so I never called anything paleo. But if you are paleo, you know, you could eat fucking chicken, yeah, sweet potatoes and broccoli. You know what I mean?
Or if you're vegetarian, right, or whatever it may be. Yeah. I mean, you kind of, across the verticals, offer every type, yeah, of person.
I knew I did the bodybuilder, the CrossFitter, fucking martial artist. These are educated consumers. They don't need the education.
Yeah.
They don't need to be told what to eat. They fucking know. And Eat Clean Bro makes it really easy. So that's, yeah, I mean, I'm always looking to improve. And then I think one of the other things too, like, my whole staff, like, I don't treat people that work for me like I'm the boss. Eat Clean Bro is a democracy, and like, I fucking spend a lot of time arguing with everybody when I could just say, shut the fuck up and do what I say. I'm the boss. Yeah, that's not something I'll ever tell anybody, yeah, who works for me. I mean, I think my passion, some raw leadership skills, I was in at the right, look, I worked my fucking ass off, but I definitely was in the right place at the right time. And I got really fucking lucky being friends with Sean. I got really lucky being friends with Arvin, and I got really fucking lucky being friends with Mike. Because those three guys, man, like, they put me on the launch pad, and my hard work and shit kept it going. But like, a lot of people never even get onto that launch pad, you know?
Yeah.
So they say like, the harder you work, the luckier you get. That's absolutely true. And another thing too, man, like, you don't get the big opportunities without first nailing the small opportunities. So don't look at a small opportunity like, oh, this shit ain't worth my time. No, you don't know who's fucking looking, man. Crush that small shit. Crush it every fucking time. Cause there's going to be one time you crush a small job that the medium side job comes up. You start getting bigger bones, crush it, bigger bones, crush it. You know, I can't stand when people treat small jobs like they're not worth their fucking time. Dude, you don't know what the future holds. You got to treat, you know, that Biggie fucking song, like, you got to treat it like it's your first song. So just a lot of fucking fundamental shit that I believe in for business is, I'm not going to hit you with all this technical talk. I'm going to hit you with raw fundamental shit, and it's worked. And you got to be really honest with yourself, what your weaknesses are, what your strengths are, and you're going to make mistakes, and you're going to get burned, and you're going to trust the wrong people, but you got to just keep fucking going.
So when people break down this episode, when they listen,
yeah,
there are just going to be a lot of great takeaways, right? Even me sitting here with you, there was a lot of things that you said that were motivational, inspiring, and things that I'm going to look at a little differently, right? Because very similar mindset to you in a lot of the ways that you think in business, right? And it's always about, for me, like, it's not about money, man. It's about passion. It's about people. We have a lot of sayings in the company, you know, people over profits, things along those lines. But if there's one thing, and I know you've talked on self-reliance, and this may be your one thing, but for somebody walking away today and saying, this is one thing I took away from Jamie. This is one thing that I'm going to kind of look towards when I get into a rough time or I need inspiration, what would be that one thing?
Man. One takeaway. I guess, like I said before, man, patience is the foundation of power. You can't have power without patience. I don't think you can be successful without understanding self-reliance. But I think what's really important, the most important thing to take away, is if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. You have to have a definite chief aim. You have to know exactly what you want out of life. Because, I mean, for me, the hardest thing in life, that was the hardest thing for me to understand, was understanding exactly what I wanted out of life. And now that I know exactly what I want out of life, happiness and all these other things, it's just so much easier. Life is so much easier now. I know what I want. I know what to work towards. That is the takeaway, man. Know what you want out of life. And put your fucking foot down. And I guess tunnel vision, man. You got to get what you want. And no one's going to give it to you. And you have to do it yourself. But you have to also be patient. And you have to treat people the way you want to be treated. You know, there's tons of fucking scumbags out there lying, cheating, stealing to get ahead. But you know what? They fall. When they fall hard. And at that point, is it even fucking worth it? Is it worth it to get something you can't hold on to? I wanted to be successful. I wanted people to be happy I was successful. I want people to be happy I'm in a nice car. I want people to be happy I have a Rolex on. You know? I don't want people to look at that motherfucker with his Rolex, that piece of shit. You know, people are like, inherently people are haters.
You want
When people see my success, they're like, yo, that motherfucker got his ass beat for that shit. And like, that motherfucker, you know, I'm taking care of my people too. So, you know, my people are taken care of. My people are buying homes. They're buying things. And, you know, I'm just trying to do everything the right way. You know, no shortcuts and shit. I'm in this for the long haul.
Man, I love it, yo. You may be one of, honestly, one of my favorite people ever to come on and do this, because I think you just have such a different story, and you've done it in a way where you haven't made any excuses. You haven't backtracked about life wasn't fair or I didn't get this chance or I didn't get this shot. You literally said, fuck it. You had your moments of down, but you pushed through it. And I think a lot of people need to hear this, and a lot of people will be inspired by it.
Yo, I tell people like this, right? Like I grew up, man, like, you know, I love my mom, I love my dad. You know, they're not perfect, but I know in their heart they raised me and they did everything they could for me the right way. But you have like ways in life you could look at things. And like one of the pivotal moments in my life was when this girl was like telling me her story, and she was telling me about her life, and like I'm like, yo, like your life wasn't that bad. And she's like, well, I would never let anything stop me. And, you know, what didn't kill me made me stronger. And I was like, you mean to tell me that, like, all the pain in my life could be used for motivation? I could use all the hard times in my life to move forward? You know, I always thought the bad shit was to keep me down. I thought the bad shit was shit to dwell on. Like, fuck that. Fucking bad shit's to fucking push you forward, to pull that arrow back. And that was the shit that fucking changed my life. So every time someone fucked me or fucking tried to fucking take me out, man, fuck you. I'm not going easy. I'm not going down without a fight. And I was always the last man standing, dude. And I always point that figure in, like, how do I do better, you know?
Love it, man.
That was big.
Nice. So for anybody that wants to follow kind of you, your journey, see what you're up to, Eat Clean Bro, where can they follow you? This is where you can give your shout out, the whole nine.
So my Instagram is Jamie Giovinazzo, but you can find me on Eat Clean Bro. Just Eat Clean Bro at Instagram and my Facebook and stuff.
Nice, man.
I still don't know how to use Twitter or LinkedIn. Fucking got to get up with that.
But you got too much personality for some of those, man. Yeah. People need to hear you and see you.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, but no, I appreciate you coming through all the way from Jersey.
Yeah.
Excited for you to be in Atlanta now, man. But honestly, appreciate the time, man. And honestly, one of my favorite ones to this day, bro. Man. I'm so happy for your success.
Thank you so much.
All right, man.
Thank you.
Appreciate you. Once again, I'm your host, Justin Epstein, and thank you for listening to Culturation. As always, this show has been powered by Premiere.